A few announcements before the homily. First, the charitable portion of our tithe this weekend will go to the missionaries of the poor in support of their outreach to the poorest of the poor throughout the world. We're happy to support these religious brothers and sisters in this great work. The flowers in the sanctuary in memory of Santiago Butler, may he rest in peace. I want to thank everyone who participated in our celebration of mercy this past week. It was great to see so many people coming in order to receive the graces of the sacrament. Now that that celebration's over, we resume our regular confession schedule, which is Monday through Thursday at 11:30 a.m., and then on Saturdays at 3 p.m. I do want to encourage you to please avail yourself of the graces of that sacrament. Please note that starting tomorrow, Monday, June 8th, the public hours of our building and our parish office will change. The hours are Monday through Thursday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., and it will be closed on Fridays. The majority of our staff's time is now spent communicating with most of you by email. So the staff needs more admin time. So by having the public hours limited, it allows them to get caught up on admin work and respond to you in a timely manner. So this is why we're making this adjustment. Starting next weekend, June 13th and 14th, we will move back to our regular Mass schedule. So Saturdays, 4 and 5:30, and then Sundays, 9 and 11. I'm so ready to go back to the schedule, huh? With the change, our number of worshipers can increase to 85 per Mass. And we know that our parishes in Charlotte are now open, so many of our friends from Charlotte are returning to their home parishes, so our numbers should be able to work out and balance out as best as possible. So we're not expecting a massive overflow. In terms of tomorrow evening, Monday at 7 p.m., I want to strongly encourage a new show run by our own Natalie Jackson called Our Cloud of Witnesses. Natalie's going to take us through all the saints that are depicted in our parish church. So the statues, the stained glass, who are these holy ones, what's their story, where, you know, what can we ask them for, like what are they the patron saints of? I think you'll very much enjoy the show. It's Mondays at 7 p.m. It's about a half hour long. If you missed the show, then it's available on our Grace Daily page afterwards. So again, I think you really enjoy that show. Don't miss it. And then lastly, this past week I received word from the bishop that he received a communique about me from Rome. That sounds ominous, doesn't it, right? What's going on here? Huh? Well, as it turns out, the Holy Father has named me one of his missionaries of mercy. What that means is that whenever the Holy Father has a specific task, I am charged over a certain area in order to assist the Holy Father. I still stay here. I'm still pastor. My duties are not affected. These are additional duties. Some of you might be aware that there are certain sins that are reserved directly to the Holy Father that only he can forgive. If you profane the Blessed Sacrament, no priest or bishop can absolve you. You have to go to the Holy Father himself. But how does that work out? Well, you appeal to the Holy Father, and then he sends a missionary of mercy. So that's the priest who absolves on behalf of the Holy Father. So that will be part of my function. Also, as the priest here is a missionary of mercy, our parish is expected to be a center of mercy. So that means that we will be asked to take on some additional things. So we'll see more confession times and more celebrations of mercy and all kinds of wonderful things in order to celebrate this beautiful gift from the Lord. So I'm figuring this out. Truth be told, I was just found out this past week and trying to get my bearings and figuring out what is expected. And as I figure it out, I'll be communicating that with the parish community. Incidentally, the bishop himself will be coming to grant a decree and offer the blessing. It'll be a private ceremony, but we'll live stream it. So anyone who would like to watch it will be able to tune in. So once I heard that the bishop was driving here to give the decree, I thought, okay, this is serious. I better pay attention, right? So it would be great to welcome our bishop to our parish. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. So this weekend we celebrate the Feast of the Holy Trinity. That means that we understand that God in his innermost essence is not solitude. We keep wanting to imagine God as this distant figure on this big throne that's very far and removed from us. But actually, by revelation, we know that actually God in his innermost essence is not that solitude. God in his innermost essence is family, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And we are welcomed into that divine family to share that divine fellowship, to share that life-giving fellowship. And those of us who accept the invitation by the workings of God's grace, we are changed. We can achieve a level of virtue and holiness that was impossible before this revelation. By drawing closer to God, not only do we come to know God, but we also are the recipients of his divine wisdom. That divine wisdom allows us to distinguish between right and wrong. It allows us to discern a state of affairs and to understand what God's will is. It allows us also to soar above state of affairs in order to properly assess and to determine what would be the right course. We are freed from the passions, the prejudices, and the preferences of a particular time. We see this in our personal lives. When we are hurt, upset, when we know we have to forgive someone, and it becomes so focused that we can't think beyond it. Our faith, our relationship with God, raises us above and places it in the light of eternity. And that by the help of his grace, we can allow God to heal us or allow us to give us the strength to give mercy. This relationship, this power that we have in the triune God is very important for us. This is also true in terms of our society. And this truth has come to mind very much over the past couple of weeks. In particular, I'm reminded of an encounter I had as a seminarian. When as a very elderly priest was sharing with me on one occasion what it was like for him to grow up in pre-World War II Germany. Some of us might not know our history, and to know that after World War I, Germany was severely punished by the Allies. Germany was decimated. Germany, they could not eat, they did not have employment, inflation was through the roof. It was purposely Germany was punished. This elderly priest is describing to me what that was like. He remembered sitting at the kitchen table and having his father cry because he was just wanting a job. He wanted to work to provide for his family. And there was no work and there was no food. In the midst of that state of affairs, there became a rallying message of justice. Germany should not be treated like this. Germany is better. This rallying cry for justice, and it became so strong and so intense that this message became absolutized. That means that all the other virtues were forgotten. Justice alone became the only virtue. And whenever we begin to absolutize virtue, we find ourselves in trouble. Now, incidentally, this particular priest shared with me that as a seminarian, as a young priest, he was completely captivated by this national socialism, what we popularly called Nazism. Completely captivated by the message of justice. And he began to join in the rallies and the chants and the slogans. Completely, totally caught up in this ideology. It was only his prayer and his study of the scriptures that eventually allowed him to break from that. This relationship with God allowed him to soar above it and to see it and to ask hard questions. Is this really what I believe? Is this to whom I want to be associated? Is this really the best course of action for us to take to accomplish such noble goals? Those questions eventually led him to the realization that this was the wrong path. This is not the path he should be following as a Christian. And so as a young priest, he began to denounce National Socialism. And then who shows up at his church? The brown shirts. Again, if you know your history, the brown shirts were the paramilitary organization in service to the National Socialist Party. They were the 20-somethings who would come and cause major riots and violence and burn things and break things, and they scared people of goodwill. The priest said these brown shirts began to show up at his church. They smashed the stained glass. They burned things. They scared people. People were afraid to come to worship. It didn't stop this priest, though. He continued to preach. And eventually the Gestapo showed up and took him to Dachau, which is one of the concentration camps. And he was there in Dachau for many years. In case you're not familiar, the priests, the parish priests of Pope St. John Paul II as a young man, those priests were sent to Dachau. And they were suffocated on their own feces while prisoners there. Dachau was a hell on earth. And this priest is describing what it was like for him to be a priest in Dachau. And then he shared with me that he has constantly offered up his years at Dachau in reparation for his selling out of his soul to an ideology. You see, this man was able to understand the divine truth. He was able to understand right and wrong because of his relationship with God. It's liberating. It helps us to see what the state of affairs do not want to show us. And this comes to mind in our world today. This story has come to mind so many times over the past couple of weeks as I look at the state of affairs of our country and I see what is happening. Because we have to be careful, dear friends, that we also are not absolutizing a virtue. We have to remind ourselves as Christians, as Americans, and as people of goodwill that a virtuous act, in order for it to remain virtuous, it must be assisted by other virtues. No virtue acts alone. It always is in a chorus of virtues, and they keep one another in check. If we absolutize one virtue, remove all the others, and just use just one, then itself becomes a vice, and it causes harm rather than a help. We have to remind ourselves that if we're going to rally for justice, justice needs the help of prudence and temperance and fortitude in order to properly complete and perform a good deed. The danger is when we allow a virtue to be absolutized, then we become easy prey to tyranny, to totalitarianism, and to anarchical forces that we justify rather than properly denounce. So we have to be very careful in our own hearts about the virtues that we absolutize. Now last week, I preached on the Feast of Pentecost about our call to be one family under one God. This week, with the eyes of a broad chorus of virtues, I think we need to identify an evil among us. I think we have to name a dark force in our presence. It's a force that is fascist, totalitarian, chaotic, deconstructionist, and violent. I speak, of course, of the group that ironically calls itself Antifa. These are the new brown shirts of our age. I say it's ironic that they call themselves Antifa because the name is supposed to represent anti-fascist, and yet they themselves are the fascists. They are the ones who are intimidating others who disagree with them. They are the ones who are causing violence. They are the ones who are provoking fear. They are the fascists. And yet they claim and hide under a more noble name. You know, historically, with the brown shirts, before World War II, no one took the brown shirt seriously. They just thought that they were 20-somethings, idealistic youth. We hear even our elected officials using these terms, and it scares me knowing history. Because no one took the brown shirt seriously. Oh, they're just young, they're idealistic, they're going to break some glass, they're going to cause some fires, it's okay. And then when one of their own staged a riot at a beer garden, people were quick to explain it away. And when one of their own even wrote a book and explained exactly what he was going to do, no one took him seriously. Of course, that was the book Mein Kampf, and it was by Adolf Hitler. No one took the brown shirt seriously until they overthrew the Weimar Republic, the most democratic government in Western civilization. Then no one was laughing. We somehow think in our minds that our government and our country will remain forever. We forget that civilization is always vulnerable. And if we're going to preserve civilization, good people must stand up and speak truth. We have to be honest with ourselves. This Antifa movement, they are domestic terrorists who seek to subvert legitimate causes for justice and use it to overthrow a democratic government. And even, as we are told, to dethrone God and the church. And so with the clarity of faith, we have to uphold the just cause of racial harmony and tranquility among all people. This is what we support as Christians. This is what we support as Americans, and we even support peaceful protests in order to assert this truth. But yet our call for justice must be assisted by the other virtues. We have to surround our call for justice with the other virtues so that those among us who are wolves in sheep's clothing can clearly be identified. That those who say we serve the common good and yet seek to destroy the very institutions of the common good can be easily identified. That those who say we rally for minority peoples while they burn their neighborhoods of these minorities We can clearly identify them. That is not one of us. This is not the movement that we should be supporting. This is not what we want. This is not the means. And as people, we should be willing to speak and say what is true and what is right. We should understand the threat that is legitimately posed in this time. I received news just last night that our sister parish in Greensboro, they themselves were threatened. And when the pastor called for the police to assist, was told that the police were overwhelmed and could not provide support. The pastor called on the men of this parish, and I'm told that dozens of men showed up in order to protect their parish church last night. If we think that Antifa is not a serious threat, then we have closed our eyes and we are hiding. And perhaps we are hiding from fear, or perhaps we're just oblivious because it has not yet touched us. But we have to understand the real and immediate threat. Now, it's true that no Christian is perfect. Each of us, we should have a healthy reservation of ourselves as we seek a virtuous life, a holy life. And we need to have that same healthy reservation toward our efforts for justice and peace, just as we should have it for the efforts of others as they pursue justice and peace. And as we do this, we have to realize the spiritual wisdom that we are never more susceptible to evil than when we are fighting it. Which is precisely why when we fight evil, we surround ourselves with the multiplicity of virtues. We can also admit, as people of goodwill, that the United States is not perfect. But unlike every other nation on this planet, our institutions were set up in such a way that they can autocorrect. We as a people can fix ourselves. We do not have to destroy the United States in order for it to live up to its noble destiny. We do not have to burn our society to the ground in order to bring about virtuous change and renewal. Do we understand our tasks as Christians and as Americans? Because as I look at the history of that pre-World War II era, what I do not find are heroic voices, even within the church. There are some priests and some bishops, and we revere them as martyrs, but the vast majority were intimidated and quiet. They thought it didn't deal with them. It didn't address them. Where were the bishops? Where were the priests? Where was the people of God? And why was there not a stronger voice denouncing this evil? As we see that in history, I pray that as the history is written of this time, that it is not said that the people of God were silent. They allowed themselves to be intimidated by fear. And I want to make sure that it's recorded that from this pulpit of this parish, to which I bear spiritual responsibility, that the threat was named and the wolves were identified. And I want it to be known that here in this community, what we stand for and what we will not tolerate. And I want us to understand that and understand the responsibilities that have been given to us. As Christians, we are called to fight for what is right with all the virtues that are necessary to do it in a proper way. We are also called to name and condemn and to distance ourselves from those forces that seek only violence and destruction, and to name them without hesitation. This is our task. We are the children of God. We are the holders of the kingdom of God. And what an important feast day in which we are reminded of this truth, the feast of the Holy Trinity. When we honor the fact that God is a divine family and that each of us have been invited to be a part of that family. As members of the family of God, that means we are called to follow His excellent way of love. That means, dear friends, that we cannot allow ourselves to be silenced or intimidated. We cannot permit ourselves to be negligent or distracted. We have to take seriously our responsibility to speak the truth in love, to call evil evil, and to praise good where we find it. This is our responsibility and our task. And I pray that when the history is written, it will be recorded that the people of Our Lady of Grace, they spoke the truth, that the legacy that we leave will be one of authentic virtue, of right action, and of constant virtue before God, that people will know what we stood for and what we would not tolerate. I don't want anyone to have any ambiguity of what we do, what we hold to and what we do not hold to. As we celebrate this Eucharist, I ask that we're filled with that grace, to have the clarity of perception and the eloquence of speech, that again we can call right, right, and evil, evil, and that our witness will stand out, and that our witness will allow authentic reform for tranquility among races and for an end to violence. We celebrate this Eucharist. We ask God for this grace. We ask Him for the legacy, the grace of legacy. We ask Him for the strength to speak good and always denounce evil.